Okay, Allison, you know those people out there who say they try not to consume any news at all because it's all gloom and doom?
I go on a news fast every now and
Yeah,
again.
sometimes you need to just stay away because it is depressing from time to time. Well, if any of you out there are listening, you have a choice. You can just turn the volume down a little bit and ignore this next segment, or you can turn it up and actually learn some really interesting things about how civilizations are built and what can make them fall. That's the gist of a new cover story in New Scientist magazine that asks the big question, are we doomed? And here's a hint, our survival is connected to how we're connected to each other. So, what does that mean? Here to explain is Deborah McKenzie. She wrote the articles and she's on the line from Brussels. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. So, your piece is all about what makes civilizations collapse. Let's start the conversation by first defining what that means. What does it mean when a society, a civilization collapses?
Well, civilization could be regarded as a system whereby people get what they need. They get the basics of life, food, water, shelter, civil order, and some kind of satisfaction in life. I mean, we build complex systems to live in, basically, that are called civilizations. When they fall, is when they can no longer meet their people's basic needs using the mechanisms that they've evolved. Now, the Roman Empire, for example, had a system where it taxed far-flung peasantry to provide money to support a large urban population. When, among other things, disease sort of weakened that system, it just stopped working. More and more people left the cities. It didn't have enough agricultural base to keep things going. It became vulnerable to barbarians who they would have easily repulsed a few years earlier. You know, that's the analyses that historians have done. And it all seems to come down to complexity, how complex your civilization gets and whether you can keep it running.
Well, let's talk about that. For your piece, you spoke with a lot of scientists who talked about something called complexity theory. Now, understanding that it might be difficult to boil down something called complexity theory into 20 seconds or less, I'll still ask you to try to do this. What is this theory, and how does it apply to what you're talking about in the piece?
Actually, I'm a humble biologist. It can't be too complicated, if I understand. And really, it's just that. I mean, you start things out. But okay, let's say you're the ancient Sumerians. You live in the semi-arid area. You don't get enough rain for your crops, so you get the bright idea of building irrigation canals. And you produce more food. Your population goes up. You need more irrigation canals. They start silting up. You hire teams to dredge them. After a while, you have to hire a management bureaucracy. You got to pay for that, so you invent taxation. You know, as you get bigger and more things
more
get
layers,
more complicated,
yeah.
You know, invariably. And it starts out as a hierarchy. And as hierarchies get more and more complicated, we see this in certain branches of government, they bring in intermediate layers of bureaucracy to deal with it. They create a new department of minority affairs or women's affairs or something when problems arise in certain areas having to deal with those. They create a new ministry, you know, whatever. That's how hierarchies deal with increasing complexities. Eventually it gets to the point where it's too complex to deal with that way, because in a hierarchy, one guy at the top or woman at the top has to get his or her head around the whole thing. And you get so complex you can't, then you become sort of the way we're becoming now. You turn into a network where the decision making is sort of decentralized. It happens all through the society. You know, nobody is in charge of getting the food into New York City every day to all the grocery stores and restaurants, but it happens because lots of individual people are making lots of individual decisions. And it's one of those self-regulating networks. Now, those seem intuitively to be very resilient and resistant to collapse. And in fact, they work very efficiently within sort of the conditions they're used to. But the trouble is that there are unexpected fragilities in those networks. You hit them at one place and the shock just transmits through the whole system.
You define some of those that we wouldn't even think of as being so critical to how our society, civilization works. Hubs, you call them, and they're people like truckers, farm workers.
Yeah, the old saying is that civilization is four meals away from anarchy. If there was a plague raging of some sort in New York City and the guys driving the trucks that carry the food into town were afraid to go in, you know, how much food have you got on Manhattan Island, you know?
Gosh, I don't know, but these are freaky questions, I have to tell you.
Yeah.
But we are living in such an amazing age, though, of advances in science, medicine, communication. I mean, don't those benefits far outweigh the risks of potential fragilities that have arisen because of our interconnectedness?
I'm not saying that it was wrong to do that. I mean, you know, if people are starving, you feed them. I mean, this is basic instinct, isn't it? Even if in the course of doing that, you create an agricultural system that brings its own problems in its train, then you try and solve those problems. Now, this is where I tend to react to, like the doom and gloom sort of accusations a little personally, because I tend to write about this kind of thing a lot. they do call me the doomsday correspondent in certain parts of the newsroom. But it's because you need to understand what's going on in order to prevent collapse or deal with breakdown. You can't just deny that you've created a system that's capable of breaking down. You have to understand how it is capable of breaking down and try and do something about that. There's a guy in Toronto named Tad Homer-Dixon who's been saying for a couple of years now, look, you know, this happens in natural ecosystems. It looks like it happens in civilizations too. What we need to do is manage collapse so you get small local breakdowns that actually turn into renewals. We start doing things differently and fixing some of our problems rather than having the thing propagate out of control into sort of a massive collapse. He feels that's possible.
So, I mean, how do we prevent this? If we think about where the momentum is, our lives are so much more interconnected. You know, we have one cell phone that manages our whole life. When that goes down, we're destroyed. And at a systemic level, this is a much bigger question. I'm going to ask you, Deborah, do you think you can, before you answer that question, can you stay on the line with me? I'm going to ask you on the other side of the break. We have to take a quick break, but I would like to get your take on how we deal with our interconnectivity and what we can do to prevent it. Can you stay with us?
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Deborah. Next up on the show, the most emailed and viewed stories on the net, including a profile of Eric Cartman from South Park. We're also going to fire up the old BPP jukebox. We have a little Blues Traveler queued up. Stay with us. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. Hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project. We're online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. We're finishing up our conversation with Deborah McKenzie. She's recently written a cover story for the New Scientist magazine about the end of the world, or at least the end of the of our civilization and what that really means. What are the fragilities built into our civilization? And we were talking, Deborah, about how we are so connected now in the age of the internet. All of our systems are related to one another. That creates these fragilities where if one part of that system breaks down, then you got a major problem. How do we prevent this? How in the world do we start to pull back some of that momentum that has us moving very firmly in the direction of more connectivity, not less?
Well, the thing is, I think the first step is realizing that connectivity brings fragility with it. It's a very widespread idea that we've created such wonderful technology that we are now immune to collapse. In fact, there are new fragilities that come in with this connectivity. And the trouble is that, you know, ecosystems do this too. You know, we didn't invent this. The trouble is that when you are a highly complex system for processing energy, which basically we are, it makes sense to become very streamlined and very efficient and very good at dealing with whatever situation you're living in. A forest does this. Natural ecosystems do this. They prune out the redundant species until they've just got what they need. Just as in globalizing and rationalizing our industries, we've pruned out a lot of redundant slaughterhouses in the meat industry or factories. I think all buttons come from one part of China
now. And you think we need those redundancies?
Yeah. You got to realize that it's profitable to prune these things out. So if it's in the long term more resilient and better for the public interest to have those redundancies in there, somebody's going to have to pay for it, because individual private companies are always going to go for more efficiency because that increases their profitability, and that's what companies are there to do. So they're going to continue to increase our close coupling and our you know, fragility, really, unless they're paid to be redundant and inefficient in some ways that sort of increase our overall resilience as a society.
Last question. When you finished writing these articles, did you immediately go to Costco or Walmart and stock up on food and water?
Well,
or
actually,
are you already well stocked?
I've been covering bird flu for a while, so yeah, I got some food in the basement. I don't have any illusions that having a bit of food in the basement is going to, you know, protect me or my family from a collapse of civilization. You know, that's big stuff.
Indeed.
I think it's important for people to take the possibility on board and start thinking creatively about it.
Deborah McKenzie, author of the articles in the New Scientist magazine on the end of civilization. Or maybe not. It depends on your outlook. Hey, Deborah, thank you so much.
Anytime.